Welcome to the Ted Brewer Show. Your host, Ted Brewer, with my co-host, Austin Brewer, bringing you the latest news and health information from around the world. I have a blast doing this with Austin, and I'm with my wife on Sunday night, so thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting HealthMasters.com, who brings you the show today. Austin, good to have you with you, buddy.
Yes, sir. It's good to be on the show.
And let me give you, let's go ahead and go with the Bible verse of the day. The eye that mocks a father, that scorns obedience to a mother, will be pecked out by the ravens of the valley and eaten by the vultures. There are three things that are too amazing for me and four that I understand: the way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a snake on a rock, the way of the ship on the high seas, and the way of a man with a maiden. You know, I love Proverbs, Austin. You know why I like Proverbs so much? Because they give you so many life practical applications as far as what you can learn from. I have read the book of Proverbs literally hundreds of times, and there's not any part of that book I don't enjoy. Ecclesiastes, I like that part of the Bible also. But some of the stuff with Ecclesiastes kind of wants to take your motivation away. All you want to do is kind of sit around and wait for the end to come. But Proverbs is a good online, you know, good thing that you can look on online on your internet, and you can read that on a daily basis, or you can pull out your Bible and dust it off and you can read that. What's your first story today, buddy?
Well, first one, this is interesting. I'm sure everybody's probably already heard about this in Moscow now, as onlookers were shocked in horror as a burqa-clad babysitter came out with a bag, and she had decapitated her four-year-old girl that was in her care and walked around the street carrying her severed head, shouting the Allah Kabar, whatever they say. It came hours after officers found the headless body of a four-year-old child when they were called to a fire at a block of the flats in the city. The girl was identified as Natasha M., and the lady was arrested. Before she was arrested, she walked up and down the street as she pulled a severed head out of her bag and telling everybody she had a bomb on her. So far, the sources say the babysitter told interrogators she did not want to hide from the police and she aimed to draw maximum amount of attention. The station was closed to passengers for some time, but no explosives were found on her, just a bloody severed head. And I just thought that was quite sad, but on the other hand, too, I thought that was quite interesting, because you don't want to say things like, you shouldn't have radical Muslim extremists be babysitters for you, but I'm just going to say it, you shouldn't have radical Muslim extremists be babysitters for you. This is insane, and the fact the video on
I'm sorry, Austin. I didn't mean to laugh. It's just, you know, to me, the whole part of all of this is you're absolutely right, and I'm laughing at the political correctness of this. You shouldn't say you shouldn't have radical Muslim extremists as babysitters. And, you know, and quite frankly, that's what they would say, that you're being a racist for saying that. And that's why I chuckled. And certainly I'm not laughing about this young girl having her head cut off. This lady, I could tell you what would have happened to her in Polk County here where we live. I mean, we live in like the redneck part of the country, I think. If she'd been walking down the street carrying a head, screaming that she had explosives on her, about 14 people would open up with concealed weapons on her at the same time and shot her. I know I would have been one of them, especially walking around with a severed head dripping blood. I mean, these are a bunch of sickos, and these people that get this extreme brainwashed belief of they have to be jihadists and kill the infidel and cut off little babies' heads. And I've seen videos, Austin, of these people training their children to cut off the heads of teddy bears. This is some sick stuff. But let's quit talking about that. I'm just going to get angry. The markets today did an interesting thing. Over the weekend, gold was around 1240 an ounce. I want to cover this real quick. And I don't know what the world happened, but it got massively shorted out of Hong Kong. And it dropped and dropped and dropped all the way down to about 1210 an ounce. And boy, this morning it came back roaring. It's already back up to almost 1240 an ounce. And what's interesting to me, we're seeing more and more volatility in the metals markets as they have bigger and bigger shortages on fulfillment. And they're not going to be able to control this that much longer, Austin. I really don't think they'll be able to do that. And the sad part about it is that a lot of folks who don't have metals and have all their money in the bank, they're going to find themselves in a real mess. This is an article I covered last night when I was on with Sharon. You missed this one. But the U.S. Air Force is now paying to have cadets learn witchcraft. Isn't that amazing?
That's great.
Financial donations made to the witchcraft to the U.S. Air Force chapel later were being used for cadets to participate in witchcraft, fairy magic, and voodoo. They were also being taught to use Ouija boards and how to summon the dead. I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, they're being taught heathenism, voodoo, goddess spirituality, I mean, Wicca. I mean, unbelievable. They're being taught to be witches and to warlocks in the Air Force. And, you think we make this stuff up, and we're not. It's just some crazy stuff. When you do the research on this news and you start seeing this stuff and you start realizing what these guys are doing, it kind of blows your mind, because I talked about this at length last night. And this is why I want to cover this again shortly. Alex Jones was talking about it a little bit today earlier about the pedophilia and what they do. But he didn't go into the detail on what they do with the pedophilia. See, what folks need to realize is the CIA is black magic inspired. It was carried on from the Germans and the Nazis, and they were contacting these fourth dimensional entities. They were using the remote viewing back in the 70s and the 80s. Finally, they got rid of that because they got called out on it. Well, then they brought witches in and put the witches on payroll to do seances and everything else. The Tavistock CIA Office of Naval Intelligence is basically a black magic institution. And when you go to Silicon Valley and you see Ray Kurzweil, you're going to find multiple things there. You're going to find Singularity University, which is completely steeped in transhumanism. It's located on the campus of NASA, which is right down the street. And also Google headquarters are there. These are black brotherhoods, and they sit on the same street almost next to each other. This is what's going on. The NSA knows the CIA is full of black magic. There's a big war going on between those guys, the Pentagon, the CIA. All of this stuff's going on right now. And they know that they're trying to have they're jockeying to have as much power as they can in the government. And what these guys do is they actually use this power they're giving by these black magic things they do to control the attention field, or the matrix around us, that we know that we're in an electrical energy field, and this is what they do. They spray piezoelectric crystals on us. This is like microwave technology. This stuff's absorbed into our bodies. This is the smart dust that Ray Kurzweil says that everything's going to be marked on the entire planet, all the plants, all the trees, all the people. That's what they're doing with the chemtrails. Then they are able to shift the frequency by upverting microwave and biodigestible light into these piezoelectric crystals. That sends light into our DNA. It reads out the information of our DNA, and it processes it by the Morgellons antenna they put in us, and then this is sent to the artificial intelligence community to read out our state of mind, and also into the artificial AI that they're setting up to basically control all of this. This is all black magic, Satanism, and they do it by doing this horrible stuff with these children and with the piezoelectric crystals. And that's about all I want to talk about that last night. I covered that in detail last night on Hodge's show. Austin, what's your next story?
Well, this is a kind of a triumph for Nebraska now. They will be the 10th state if the bill gets passed to require an actual criminal conviction as a prerequisite for most, if not all, forfeitures. They're changing the asset forfeiture bill. It's LB 1106. It was introduced in Nebraska by State Senator Tommy Garrett. And it'll put Nebraska to be the 10th state to require a full criminal conviction as a prerequisite for forfeitures. I've talked about this numerous times. Most of the states in the country, you don't even have to be convicted of a crime. They can simply say, we think you could have possibly, maybe, were involved in something that we think was illegal, so we're going to take all of your stuff, including your bank account, your cars, your money in your wallet, your safe, whatever they deem so. Now, it's becoming more and more difficult because more and more states are starting to catch on to this, and there's getting so much blowback from the civilians in this country that are tired of having their stuff taken for no reason at all. The LB 1106 in Nebraska would require a criminal conviction for drugs, gambling, or child pornography offenses, and basically the bill would also provide counsel to indignant, innocent owners who did not know or consent to have their property being used in a criminal activity. It's not going as far as a full reform on the Asset Forfeiture Act as some other states have, but it's definitely a step above what a lot of other states are doing as far as just full-blown asset forfeiture when the cops deem necessary, and then you have to fight to prove your innocence to get your stuff back, even though you were never convicted of any type of crime. So I'd like to see this done in more states and have this entire thing reformed. But, I mean, hopefully we'll see something change.
you know, that's always been one of the most unjust things I've seen in our republic. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It basically shows you the rule of law is dead. Okay, I'm going to pull you over for a traffic stop. Oh, you're carrying $1,000 with you? Oh, you just sold a dirt bike. I don't care. Give me the $1,000. You're obviously using that for drugs. I got to go. Have a good day. Bye-bye. And they leave with your money. And you're like, what the heck just happened here? They took my $1,000. Well, obviously it was being used in a drug transaction. No, it wasn't. I just sold a dirt bike. Are you on crack? What's wrong with you? It doesn't make a difference. I'm going to take it anyhow. You want to say something? Now you're resisting arrest. Now you'll be charged criminally. I mean, are you joking me? This is what they do. It really is that messed up. And that's why they want to get rid of cash, because the globalists want to control us. But I don't think these asset forfeiture guys, they don't want us to control cash. They want to keep taking the stuff. Here's an interesting thing.
That's exactly right. And one of the biggest aspects is to prevent this from happening. As I tell people this repeatedly, and so have you, Dad, is you never consent to having your vehicle searched. Never allow them to do it. Because what happens is, even if you're not doing anything, if you have cash on your person or in your vehicle and you say, yeah, I don't have any dope in here, I'm not doing anything illegal, sure, you can search my car, that automatically gives them the right to enter your vehicle and search it because you just gave them permission. If you tell them, no, I'm sorry, my attorney's not present, I don't feel comfortable with you searching my vehicle without my attorney present, he'd have to come over here and be here. If you guys would like to wait, you know, he can be here in probably 12 to 48 hours. But if not, I'd like to go freely on my way unmolested. Majority of the time, the cop knows at that point that you know your rights and the situation doesn't escalate. Now, if you are doing something illegal, I can't give you much advice on that. You have to, I don't recommend doing anything illegal, but at all times, regardless of what you're doing, never give them permission to search your vehicle.
You know, Austin, I remember when you were 18 years old and you had a hunting shotgun behind your seat in the truck, completely out of view, and you got stopped for a red light and they pulled you over. And I remember they wanted to search your vehicle, and you told them no. And they basically just kept you detained for almost an hour, and then they finally searched your vehicle, and they found this gun behind your seat, perfectly legal, didn't make any difference. You were charged with a criminal act, I remember that. And I spoke to a friend of mine who's a circuit court judge here in town who's now retired, and he told me, you got to make this go away. And we went to a really good attorney over in Bartow. He called up the state attorney's office, and they completely didn't even charge you guys because they never had the right to search the vehicle, even though you had a completely legal gun behind the seat. And so guys, when we talk to you about this kind of stuff, we're not making this stuff up. It was a bogus bust over a red light ticket for absolutely no reason. A couple of kids running around. I mean, they weren't pulling the guns on anybody. It was a hunting shotgun. In fact, it was one of my guns. And the craziest thing about this is, you know, these kids didn't know any better, and they didn't realize it had to be in a sock, you know, in a zippered sock, you know, behind the seat. I mean, it wasn't even readily accessible. And the sad part about all of this, Austin, is that, you know, these cops that do this kind of stuff, they get away with it all the time. And then what happened is, after they completely refused to process this doggone case, they refused to give the gun back. And I remember I called up the lady who took the gun, the police officer who took the gun from you guys, and I told her, I said, I need to file a theft report. Our gun's been stolen by you. And so we're going to go ahead and have the state attorney look at you now. You're going to get, because she refused to give the gun back. And finally, she reluctantly decided to give the gun back. That was a mess that happened to you about 10 years ago. And I tell you, the craziest thing about this is, when things like that happen to you, especially at a young age, you never, ever forget it. Now, the same thing happened a few years later after that. You brought one of your friends over, and we were talking about drunk driving. And I chewed him out, and I told him, whatever you do, don't be drinking and driving. It's stupid, stupid, stupid. And if you're going to be an idiot and you do something like this, you make sure that you talk to your attorney and never, ever blow a breathalyzer, because you're giving them evidence to convict you. And I'll never forget this. It wasn't 3 months later, Austin, and you remember this. A kid got busted for a DUI. They couldn't do it. He wouldn't blow the breathalyzer. He ended up getting an administrative revocation of his license for 1 year. He was never convicted of a DUI. There was no evidence to convict him. And after 12 months, that thing dropped off his record, and he was never going to get the DUI off his record. It would have cost him huge amounts of insurance for the rest of his life. And, of course, he immediately stopped drinking. He was being an idiot doing that to start with. But, you know, I always tell folks, talk to your attorney, know your rights. If you're sitting there and somebody drops a dime on you because somebody said you were mean to one of your kids and the Department of Family Services shows up, the first thing you do, the first words that come out of your mouth are, I'm not going to talk to you until I talk to my attorney. And if you have an attorney that's on retainer, call him up and have him talk to the person immediately and ask them to leave the house. I'm telling you guys, you can't be giving information out about yourself to convict yourself. You can't do that. We have a right to be quiet. We have a right to not convict ourselves and indict ourselves, and we have a right to be silent. You know, and then because they'll tell you right there when they read you the Miranda, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to remain silent. You have a right to an attorney. You understand these rights. And if you don't understand these rights, you need to say, no, I don't understand the rights. You got to tell them that. Nowadays, they don't even read the Miranda most of the time, Austin, because of the Patriot Act, because of Homeland Security. They can pretty much say whatever they want to say and do whatever they want to do to you, and there's not much you can say to them. So I would just keep your mouth shut. Because my attorney, I've got a good friend of mine who was my college roommate in college, and he told me one time, he goes, Ted, I've never been able to help anybody and say to them, I'm really glad you talked to the police. Okay. Yeah. He says, don't talk to them. Just don't have anything to say. See, I can't talk to you. My attorney's not present. If you want to go out and get a pizza when this is over with, I'll be happy to take you out and get a pizza. We can watch a Florida State football game or whatever, but I can't talk to you. And that's the biggest problem that people do. They think the cop's their friend. The cop's going to be nice to them, get them to confess to something. And as soon as the cops get you to confess to it, I mean, if you get pulled for a speeding ticket, just say, and the cop says, how fast are you going? Well, just don't be paying attention to your speedometer. See, I don't know how fast I was going. That's the easiest way. But that way you never, ever make yourself out that you're lying to the cop. I got caught you on radar doing 75 miles an hour. Well, okay. You know, I don't know. I don't know how fast I was going. You never agree to what they're saying, and you never talk to them. Just give them your driver's license, let them do what they're going to do. Now, what I will do, I'll talk to them first, and I'll give them my concealed weapons permit first, and I'll say, look, you know, if you guys ever get in trouble, you know, I'll be here for you. I'll back you up. And a lot of times when you do that, they realize that you're a good citizen or you would have a gun permit, and they leave you alone. They don't even give you a ticket. I've had it happen multiple times. So the truth is this. You know, guys, be nice to the police officers. There's some really, really nice cops out there. There really are. Now, there's some real mean ones, too. But I guarantee you, you don't be mean to the mean ones. If you're mean to the mean ones, it goes bad really fast. Really, really fast. So always remember this, guys. Be nice, then remember to be more nice, and remember to keep your mouth shut if you get pulled over. Don't give them evidence. And number one, but before you do anything, don't drink and drive. I don't want to be on the road with you out there drinking and driving. I don't want my family out there or my wife out there or my children out there with you drinking and driving. Get a designated driver, take a taxi, crawl in the back seat and go to sleep. Do whatever you need to do, but don't get behind that wheel after you've been drinking. That's super important. What's your next story, Oz?
Also, too, stop texting and driving. I'm sick of seeing that all the time.
Don't start me on that.
Someone almost hit me the other day while I was in my truck because this girl in this car was so busy texting, she couldn't wait 5 minutes to where she was going. She's swerving all over the road texting, and I pull up beside her, and my truck, you know, I got a pickup truck, so I'm sitting a little bit taller than her car, and I look down, and she's just buried in her phone, driving, not at a red light, driving, and just swerving all over the place. I honk my horn at her, roll my window down, and I yell, I say, get off the phone. And, you know, you can tell she didn't know really what to do, so she put her phone down, and then kind of sped off real quick and stopped. I mean, they even did that study. I think it was Mythbusters or somebody. It was on TV. I watched it. And they did it on a closed course. They took a couple different individuals, and they had them drive when they were at the legal limit of drinking, you know, like 3 or 4 beers. They blew a breathalyzer, and they drove on this course, and then they had to stop, turn, avoid obstacles. And then they did it later on in another day with them on the phone responding to text messages. And they hit more cones, more obstacles, and failed more corners than when they were texting than when they were drinking. It was more dangerous. And I'm not advocating drinking at all, but I'm saying that's how dangerous it is to be on your phone, staring at your iPhone, punching digits, because you can't wait 5 minutes, or just call somebody. Don't be alone all the time. Just call them. Texting's great when you're doing stuff. You're at the office. You're trying to get stuff done efficiently. When you're on the road, when you're driving, just call somebody. Hey, I'm coming over right now. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Boom. You're done. Instead of the stupid text messaging while you're driving, putting everybody at risk. That's why they're making it a mandate in most states now. It's illegal to text and drive. You can get a ticket for it. And I completely agree with that because they're showing now, like I said before, it's even more dangerous than drinking and driving.
Well, I agree with you, Austin. And see, when I have to text, I pull over. If I get a text message that I have to look at or whatever, I just pull the car over. It just takes a second, unless I'm on the interstate because that's not safe. Then I just ignore it, shut it off. And what I also do is I have a hands-free in almost all the cars. I mean, my Chevrolet truck has a hands-free on it now. I mean, it ties into the Bluetooth of the automobile, and it rings. You just push the steering wheel, and you answer the telephone. You talk and keep your eyes on the road, not be looking down. So just program your cars and your Bluetooth to your phones. Stay off the texts. And guys, don't be checking your emails and doing all that kind of crazy stuff when you're riding. I got a friend of mine who's a really good guy. He sent me a doggone email today. I could text it. I couldn't believe it. He did a video, and you know, like a 3-minute video while he's driving down the road. I mean, and then he sends it out like it's supposed to be some great thing to watch. And I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? Dude, this is just not safe. You know, don't be doing stuff like this. I mean, are you joking me? Here's the next story. Scientists are raising concern over weed killer glyphosate in a new study. Now, the reason I'm reading this to you, because I've read it so many times, this is in Consumer Reports, Austin, mainstream news. And it says the health and environmental risks of glyphosate, the pesticide known by the commercial name as Roundup, have been underestimated, according to a new report published in the Journal of Environmental Health. The paper was authored by 14 scientists, and it goes on and on and on how bad this is. And this is from Consumer Reports. And it says that for nearly 80 years, Consumer Reports has been testing products and advocating for better, safer, more fair consumer marketplace. 80 years in a mainstream magazine like Consumer Reports is finally calling out glyphosates. Also, I want to do one more thing too. This was a really interesting thing I saw today. They had these kids, and they put a gun. It was a fake gun, but it looked like a real gun in a room. Couldn't tell the difference, but it was not capable of shooting. And they put it in a room, and they turned a bunch of 5 and 6 year old toddlers loose, Austin, and literally within 90 seconds, the first toddler finds the gun. And they start shooting each other with it. They start taking it away from each other and shooting each other with it. And the only two kids who didn't do it were kids whose parents had concealed weapons permits and who'd been trained in fire safety, and they wouldn't touch it because they said it was too dangerous.
Really? That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting? So that, again, blows everybody out of the water as far as all of the nonsense saying how bad guns are. No, the thing about it is what you have to do is you have to have these children trained properly. I'll never forget when you were like 5 years old. We lived out in the country, and I was keeping my gun locked up where you couldn't see it. And you remember this, I know you do. And I walked out there and took a big old watermelon, and it was a 45, and I was running hollow tips on it. And I brought you out there with no ear protection, and I set that thing up on a stand out there, you know, with a berm behind it, so nothing could go through it. And I had you stand right beside me, and I discharged that gun. And son, and I'm telling you this, and guys, listen to me, he never wanted to touch nothing with that gun until he's about 10 years old, because he learned very quickly how loud and how dangerous it was when that watermelon exploded. Now, see, that's what you've got to do with your kids. You've got to teach them gun safety if you have guns in the house. And if your state requires trigger locks, you've got to keep trigger locks on your guns. That's so important, because you don't want to get yourself in trouble because your kid goes out and shoots somebody, and you end up going to prison. So keep those guns locked up, keep them safe, and you can always pull them out and put them by your nightstand after the kids are in bed and put them away in the morning. What's your next story, Oz?
Next one's related to glyphosate, too, because it's funny you were talking about that. You know, back in 2013, this hardly ever got any media coverage. What we talked about it one time before is that the FDA actually massively raised the acceptable amount of glyphosate in food, and FDA didn't perform any independent tests on higher residual levels of glyphosate being dangerous to humans or the environment. They solely relied on tests and data provided by Monsanto in 2012. And what's crazy is the regulation raised the glyphosate levels in oilseed crops, which include sesame, flax, and soybean, from 20 parts per million to 40 parts per million. Mm-hmm. And it also raised the allowable glyphosate contamination level for sweet potatoes and carrots from, listen to this, 0.2 parts per million to 3 parts per million for sweet potatoes and 5 parts per million for carrots. And it's interesting because, you know, everybody goes, oh, that's fine, you know, it's safe. No, it's not safe at all. Germany's flipping out right now because, as you guys know, speaking of alcohol, Germany is very big on their beer. Most people know that. The German beer industry is in shock right now after 14 different popular beer brands have shown up with traces of glyphosate levels as high as 30 micrograms per liter, even in beer that's supposed to be brewed from only water, malt, and hops. These findings by the Munich Environmental Institute calls into question the rampant spraying of Roundup on both GMO and non-GMO crops around the world and cast doubt upon Germany's 500-year-old beer purity law. Germany's Farm Federation has denied all responsibility, saying that malt derived from glyphosate-sprayed barley has been completely banned. The group does admit, however, though, that glyphosate could have been used on farms prior to the ban, meaning barley could still be grown in glyphosate-drenched soil. And what's interesting is, you know, some of them were up to 30 micrograms per liter. The highest reading, which is that, is 300 times the legal glyphosate limit in drinking water in Germany, calling this contamination level alarming. And this is what you've talked about before, Dad, is, you know, everybody goes, well, this food spray with Roundup here, so we're getting this food, it wasn't sprayed. This stuff is drenched on the crops now. It seeps into the soil and seeps into the soil, and there's never enough time for the rain to push this stuff down in the earth far enough to get away from the roots. It's done yearly, over and over and over again, and that's what we're seeing now. Even though they're not even allowed to use GMO or glyphosate sprayed barley in Germany, this beer is coming up with heavy, heavy amounts of glyphosate in beer that the contents were never even supposed to be exposed to glyphosate. That's a shocker for the German beer industry, because they're funny about their beer over there.
Well, you know, the main reason this is being done is that glyphosate has not been completely banned in Germany, just like it hasn't been banned in the United States, and they're still spraying it in different areas, and it's called glyphosate drift, like pollen drift. And what happens, they get in an airplane, and they spray this a couple hundred feet or 100 feet in the air, and they got wind blowing. This stuff is in, you know, microparticles, and it can literally drift on the air and float for miles. And that's the problem that they're running into. That's the problem with all of this. It's very difficult right now in the United States of America to take an air quality sample anywhere, and not have glyphosate in the air because of this. And this is some poisonous stuff that needs to be completely banned and taken back off the market. And the thing about it is, guys, these glyphosate, you know, Roundup Ready corn crops and all this stuff, their yield's not any higher than the natural stuff is. The problem is they were lied to by the farmers. And they have what's called terminator genes in these crops, in these seeds. And what happens is, my dad used to tell me about this all the time, because, you know, my grandfather came over in the late 1800s from Germany, started a farm in Iowa, and started basically farming 1,500 acres, you know, using horses to pull a plow. And what was crazy with this is that he told me, he says, son, he goes, If we're not careful, he says, we're going to believe all the lies from these GMO manufacturers, these seeds, and Monsanto and everybody else. He says, what they're doing now, he says, every single year, we keep like a tenth of our crop, and that would be our seed. This is the seed time and harvest. This is what these preachers who want to take this out of context do, as far as telling them, if you give them your seed, if you give a percentage of your seed to them, that you'll be blessed for it. Now, that is true. That's a biblical process, and they don't talk about it in the Bible. But what I'm saying, these guys who take it out of context, they'll tell you that it doesn't matter what you do or how you live or whatever, if you give me money and you'll be blessed, you need to walk away from those guys. It's just nonsense, okay? I remember seeing one time one of the guys on TV actually flipped the whole crowd off, you know, on national TV. She gave him the bird. She gave him the shot of a finger because he said they weren't giving enough money to him. And that's just crazy stuff. But here's the thing about this is you don't eat the seed. I mean, we know that's the truth. That's because in the olden days, they'd take a tenth of the crop, Austin, and they would save the seed to plant again, to plant again, to plant again, because the seed was alive. It was ready to be regrown. Well, Monsanto didn't like that because they weren't selling enough seeds. And what the farmers would do is they'd take a tenth of their crop and they'd basically put it away every year and they'd plant it again the following year. Well, Monsanto couldn't sell seeds. So they came out with this lie that they're going to give them higher productivity in their yields if they use their seeds. Well, what they didn't tell them is there were terminator seeds in that crop that if you planted it, it came up and you harvested it, it wouldn't regrow if you replanted it. It's dead. It doesn't come back. They actually genetically manipulated it so it wouldn't grow. And so that's what happened to these guys. And so they started doing this, and all of a sudden now the crop won't grow. So now they got to buy the Monsanto seed, and that's how they got their foot in there. And then they started buying up all these family farms, and, you know, like, you know, Archer Daniels Midland, these huge corporations. And that's what's happened to all of us in the United States. That's why we're being so poisoned with all this stuff. And it's just and here's another article right here. This is the these companies are, this is out of California. Are these companies growing produce with oil industry wastewater? And in California, some commercial farms came up with their own solution to the drought, and it's not pretty. They decided to use recycled oil industry wastewater to grow their produce. Chevron Oil Company treats 21 million gallons of wastewater per day and sends it to the farmers who use it to turn water 45,000 acres of crops. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's by Daisy Luther. And it starts talking about all the chemicals they're putting on these crops and all the oil spills and all of the junk that's in here. And the sad part about it is that, you know, they're growing grapes, raisins, persimmons, prunes, plums, citrus, all of this stuff with contaminated water supplies. And, you know, all of these chemicals and these benzenes and all these things that are in that water, this is some toxic stuff. and how much of that stuff is getting on the food and is getting processed, and then we're eating all that stuff too, Austin. This is completely, in fact, one of my listeners actually sent me this link and said, is this true? And I said, well, yeah. He said, they found acetone and methylene chloride. These are solvents used to remove grease from equipment and soften crude oil. And he said that the concentrations of the water were higher than he had seen at the oil spill disaster sites. He also found C20 and C34 hydrocarbons found in the oil. And this is what they're watering the food with, and it's getting on the crops. And if they don't wash it off or scrub it off or whatever, Austin, we're going to eat this mess too. What a mess. Unbelievable. What's your next story, son?
Yeah, it is definitely a mess. This is interesting, too, in Venezuela. Most people haven't really seen much mainstream news in Venezuela, but they're going in pretty serious riots and everything else right there. And they've been having food issues for quite some time. You know, a couple of years ago, if you did the research, they started something what was nicknamed Fingerprints for Food, where essentially they used the biometrics to scan it. It was reported by the Miami Herald in May 2014. They ordered the implementation of biometrics to allow the government to track what customers of state-owned grocery stores were purchasing and perhaps how much they were purchasing, and to convince basically all the hungry people in Venezuela to register for this program. They promised that anyone who signed up and would give the government their fingerprints would be eligible for discounts and prizes. Now, the scheme was never made mandatory such, but quite frankly, the food shortage is getting so bad. But they're using it more and more to control people. You show up again, well, I ran out of food. Well, you've already used your food allotment this week. You can't buy any more food. Your biometrics are blocked for another week. This is why it's so important, guys, to have some backup food on reserve. And I've told you before, you know, it doesn't matter if you guys, our stuff that we have is good quality. We have the freeze-dried foods in the 200 and 275 serving. If that's out of your budget, then please get some canned foods and keep them stored in the house and rotate them. Try and get them without BPA, you know, in the lining. You know, even getting your own beans and rice and drying it and putting it in a bucket. But have some backup food, please. It doesn't affect me one bit if you buy us food or not. We have it here. It's awesome. We sell a lot of it because it's really good quality. But when you see stuff like this in Venezuela and the government starts controlling your access to food, trust me when I say it will not be long before that happens in other countries, including here. As soon as there's a severe food shortage, this is always what's implemented, is food rationing. You never want to be stuck in one of these lines with 4,000 or 5,000 people waiting days on end to get into the grocery store just so you can get a couple cans of green beans and a can of, you know, tuna. It's just not necessary. All this stuff is easily prevented to have a little bit of food stored up just every month. A little bit. You don't spend a lot. You spend $30, $40 a month extra. Cut out some of your cable or some of your high-speed internet. Go with a slower-speed internet. Something so you can just slowly put food away every single month. So if the situation does ever arise, you have it there as a backup. Am I right about this, Dad?
Well, you know, let me tell you a little story, Austin. Back in 1974, we had what's called the Arab oil embargo in the United States. And the Saudis decided they wanted to go ahead and show their little muscles there. They developed and they built together OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. And they decided they were going to go ahead and stop production of oil. Now, they didn't stop it all the way, but what they did, they cut way, way, way back to drive the prices up and to show everybody how powerful they were. And they did. We had massive shortages of fuel. Now, guys, if you're over the age of 50, you probably remember this. And if you're over the age of 60, like I am, I know you remember this. And we were literally standing in line, Austin, for 3 to 4 to 6 hours in some of the major cities just to get about 10 gallons of gasoline. And there were restrictions on how much gas you could buy. And people were fighting. People were getting shot. People were getting killed in gasoline lines. And the food was still plentiful. So think about this for a second. Remember how you felt when you couldn't get gas and how bad it was. Multiply that by about 10,000 if you can't feed your family. Get our freeze-dried food. Get somebody's freeze-dried food. I don't care. Gosh, we've got a sale right now going on through today. It's called Doug 5, D-O-U-G-5. It's through the end of the month. It's through tonight at midnight. Doug 5. Everything at Health Masters is on sale for 5% off. And if you get over $100 worth of stuff, you still get free shipping plus the 5%. So do yourself a favor. You know, if you don't get our stuff, as far as the food, yes, somebody else's food. We don't put pork. I don't put soy. I don't put any of that. I don't have any of that food here at the office. We don't sell it. So when you buy it from Health Masters, you know you're getting really good high quality stuff. Plus everything else we have on the websites, even the sale items are going to be another 5% off. Healthmasters.com. We bring you the finest, highest quality nutraceutical supplements in the world. They sponsor the show. That's why you can listen to this show for one full hour, which is the equivalent of 2 hours on like GCN, without a bunch of commercial breaks. And we try to give ourselves like 30 seconds once a day to talk about Health Masters as a sponsor of the show. So thank you for supporting Health Masters. And otherwise, we don't really, sometimes we don't do a very good job of that. Also, sometimes we forget to even talk about it. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, actually. It's a terrible infomercial. But here we are back to the New York Times is now rethinking Hillary Clinton for president. You think? I mean, 1 month ago, the old gray lady said the Democrat primary voters had the chance to nominate one of the most broadly and deeply qualified presidential candidates in modern history. Really? But now they're thinking through it and they're beginning to realize that, hey, wait a minute, maybe we need to ask our voters some questions. So here's the truth. Hillary Clinton is a criminal. She's a criminal. She's just a criminal. That's all she is. I mean, she's a criminal. I mean, it's just obvious by the email thing. She's not a patriot. They ran drugs out of Mena, Arkansas, her and her husband. You can watch the videos by the Clinton Circle of Power and the Clinton Chronicles. You can see them online for free. He was the governor of the state. They burned up the Rose Law Firm. They actually burned it. A bunch of people died, including Vince Foster, around them. Over 100 people who worked on their campaign or worked with them were all found dead by, you know, unnatural causes. I mean, these guys are just straight hoodlum CIA mafia criminals. I was watching a video the other night, and Bill Clinton was doing this is just a couple of weeks ago, he was doing this. He was doing a presentation for Hillary, recruiting, you know, basically for her. And suddenly he was taking questions from the audience. And this Marine Corps guy gets up, Austin, big old Marine Corps guy, and starts talking about all the tours of duty he's done. And then finally he goes, how can you promote your wife after what she did in Benghazi, after she had those boys killed to cover up Stevens' death and what they were doing there? And Bill Clinton didn't know what to say. He got all flustered. And then all the crowd starts yelling at him. But nobody attacked the big Marine. It was funny. They just let him be. And it was almost all women in the audience. And it was crazy. There were some guys there. Finally, the security comes up because he wouldn't stop talking. And Bill Clinton told him to sit down and shut up. A former Marine or a current Marine who had served his country, Clinton told him to shut up. I couldn't believe it. Clinton knows better than that. He should have gone ahead. You watch it. The video's gone viral. You could go ahead. And finally, the guy walks out, and the person who was videotaping the whole thing, she's still sitting there videotaping. Then she gets up, and she starts out Bill Clinton. Before you know it, they're dragging them both outside. But the craziest thing was he called them out. And this was going to happen. These people are career criminals. If you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman and you claim to be a Christian, are you kidding me? Really? Even Farrakhan said the other day on tape that Hillary Clinton was an evil, evil woman and that Trump was his preferred person to vote for. I mean, this is Louis Farrakhan, you know, the head of the Muslim Black Pantherhood, Black Party, or whatever you want to call it in the United States. I mean, he's calling these people out. Remember, Hillary Clinton, according to Doc Marquis, who was on this show a few months ago, is a witch. I mean, a full-blown Illuminati witch. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I haven't seen her in these services. Do you think I'd be surprised with everything else that's going on if she's a witch? Absolutely not. I wouldn't be surprised about any of that. You know, but the point is, you know, Alex Jones said it succinctly today. He said, if you vote for Hillary Clinton, you have to be an idiot. And, you know, I agree with him. I really do agree with him. How in the world could it be? And then I had another person email me today, and they said the grassroots movement. Now, guys, listen to me. All you 60-year-old guys, listen to me for a second, 70-year-old guys. They said, I haven't seen this movement in this country since the 60s. This is like the 60s all over again, when everybody gets so pissed off at the government. They say, we've had enough, and we're not going to put up with this crap anymore. This is what it felt like, Austin, back in the 60s, when we were boycotting college campuses, taking over college campuses, and protesting the Vietnam War. The people in the United States finally woke up, and they said, you know, we've had enough of this corruption and this crap. Because remember, they killed our last real president, Kennedy. Then they killed his brother. Then they killed Martin Luther King. Then they killed Malcolm X. They were just assassinating everybody. It was the craziest thing you've ever seen. And then the craziest thing about it was, Oz, they were covering it all up with the CIA, you know, like with the Kennedy assassination. And these guys get so bold and they get so cocky, they do it right in your face. They kill you, and then they put a pillow over your face, and they say to the world, piss on you, excuse my language, we're going to do what we want to do, there's nothing you can do. This is the message we're doing for you guys. And this is the mess that happened in the 60s, Austin, and we impeached Richard Nixon. We forced him to step down. You know, we got rid of Lyndon Johnson. We had enough of all of it. The people in the United States galvanized, and we got together, and we said enough of all of this stuff. And forgive my language, guys, I'm not trying to offend anybody, but I'm just to the point now, I don't know what else to say. We have to say no more. This is the 60s revolution all over again. I felt it when they said that to me. I said, you know what, I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's true, it is. We are actually in a situation here where we have the opportunity to change it back to where it needs to be, at least to try to stop this onslaught of this transhumanism and the singularity university and being chipped with microdust all over the doggone planet. It's time, guys, that we all stood together in a unified front. Don't be tearing each other down. Support each other. Thank you for supporting healthmasters.com. Realize we're all out here in the open here. We're not undercover. We're not hiding. I'm just telling the truth. We're not, you know, in the back basement, you know, with a 50 caliber bear hoping nobody shows up. We're out here on the radio talking to you guys. And, you know, and I'm telling you the truth. And I'm not politically correct. I don't want to be politically correct. And I'm going to always tell you the truth until the day that comes for me to check out. I mean, it was to the point the other night I told my wife, I said, honey, I said, in the event that I disappear and I'm not around here, you can't find me, I didn't go peacefully. And I guarantee you, I'm carrying three magazines with me. It wasn't pretty. I'm not going to just be disappeared. I'm not suicidal. I don't want to leave. The point is, we've got to stand in the aggregate. We have to stand in the aggregate together. They can't control the aggregate. When 300 million people say genug, which is a German word for enough, we're not going to put up with it anymore, it'll change. It has to go back. At least we can rewind it. We can press rewind and go back a few years, maybe a few decades, and try to get this right. And pray that Donald Trump stays in for more than one term. He only wants to do one term. Pray he stays in for two terms and he can get things straightened out. What's your next story, Oz?
Yeah, well, let's hope we can get him in the office first and they don't try and take him out.
I'm trying to speak in faith.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, interesting, this big government just gets worse. In Seattle, Washington now, a new ordinance is beginning in July, which will target residents and businesses for throwing away food. This is interesting. The local government there is turning garbage collectors into trash inspectors. If the garbage collectors deem that 10% or more of the trash is composable food or waste, then the resident or business is to be fined and the money returned to the state. Now, while recycling trash and composting and all that is an awesome idea, I'm for it, using fines and forcing people this way is not usually any proper way to accomplish a goal. I try to recycle some. I probably don't do as good as I should. I'll admit that. But I do try and do it quite a bit, especially all the stuff we do here at the office and all the stuff with the boxes and everything we use. Always try and recycle them. But, guys, sitting here and allowing the government to start fining you and to go through your trash, and if they deem you have too much food or waste in there, they're going to start fining you. This, again, is the same thing we keep talking about with government overstep intrusion into our lives. Every single thing is being monitored. We've already talked about the NSA, everything else. If you guys are in Seattle, Washington, you need to be protesting the heck out of this. Now, most people are going to say, oh, well, it's good. We shouldn't be wasting food anyways. But the thing about it is, according to Seattle Times, the city just barely fell short of its entire recycling goal. They recycled 56% of their trash in 2013. Their goal was to have 60% of their trash recycled. So apparently the council members think that if they just start fining people, it'll force them into submission to recycle more food, and it probably will. But again, this is not something that we need to be allowing to happen in our states. If you see this thing start to happen, you need to contact your local congressman, your governor, everybody, and let them know this is not acceptable in our society. We don't need to be fined for petty little things like this, because it starts here and then it goes to a whole other level. We've seen that with the seatbelt laws now. And again, I'm not advocating you don't wear your seatbelt, because I do. I think seatbelts are very beneficial. But when we let them pass that law in Florida 7-8 years ago that stated that if you got pulled over, a secondary traffic citation could be written if you were not wearing your seatbelt. When we let them pass that, it completely and totally changed the way that officers were allowed to perform pullovers and stops. Because at that point, after that happened, they said, you'll never be able to be pulled over for a seatbelt. You can never be charged with that as your first crime as far as what you're pulled over for. It'll never happen. The very next year that they passed the seatbelt law, they immediately changed it in the bill. The next year that stated having your seatbelt on or not wearing your seatbelt is a first offense, and an officer sees you through your window not wearing a seatbelt, he can pull you and then charge you with anything else he deems necessary. Once we started doing that, now they have seatbelt checks in Florida, guys. They set up roadblocks with officers on both sides of the road and try and look in your window to see if you're wearing a seatbelt and immediately pull you over and fine you for not wearing a seatbelt. And it's not like $20 or $30. It's like a $150 fine if you don't wear your seatbelt. Now, last time I checked in Florida, you don't even have to wear a motorcycle helmet if you're over the age of 21. So tell me how there's any legitimate purpose in forcing us by law and fining us to wear a seatbelt in an 8,000-pound vehicle, but we don't have to wear helmets if we're on a motorcycle. Makes no sense at all. It has nothing to do with the safety of our person, has nothing to do with the safety of anybody driving. It's all about to increase revenue and increase the police state and allow them to pull you over for completely non-essential traffic violations that shouldn't even exist, and then it leads into further arrests, further traffic stops, further tickets, because then they find more things to write you up for and arrest you for if they can deem necessary. That's the end of my rant on that. I just kind of went off. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay, Austin. I remember years ago, I was going through a seatbelt check thing over at Lakeland, and I didn't see the officers. I'm in a little bitty sports car flipping around behind a bunch of pickup trucks, and I was wearing my seatbelt. Well, they chased me down to want to know why I didn't stop for the seatbelt check. It ended up turning into a giant brouhaha. And the thing about it was I was wearing my seatbelt. So I agree with you 100%. It's, you know, people do stuff like this. These cops do. And I can't believe they can sleep at night. And I remember that Lakeland had one of the most corrupt police departments in the entire country. And that whole thing ended up with three police officers with me getting terminated for other reasons. And I thought to myself, these guys are nuts. I said, I'm wearing my seatbelt. I don't see them. And now all of a sudden they chased me down. I said, are you kidding me? For what? Because I didn't stop at a seatbelt check when I didn't see somebody. It's exactly what you said. If they weren't doing these stupid mandatory seatbelt laws, I mean, they didn't have any lights on. They didn't have a roadblock set up. They didn't have anything. I asked them, I said, where were your lights? Where were you guys? I mean, I didn't know where you were. And they said, it doesn't matter. You didn't see us. It doesn't matter. We're going to stop you now and we're going to fine you. And I'm like, well, whatever, guys. Have fun with all that. But that's a long story made real short, by the way. That was convoluted. See, California is still struggling with unfunded liabilities. It's California's debt and liabilities that are concerning financial analysts. Particularly the state's rapidly growing unfunded retiree health care costs, which grew up more than 80% over the past decade. California has promised $74 billion in more health and dental benefits to current and retired state workers than the state has put aside. So now there's $74 billion. California is a socialistic communist nightmare. I mean, but they've got their billions and billions of dollars for their illegals that they feed, and they put. Oh, no, I'm not going to start. Never mind. I'll do all that. Facing default, some student loan borrowers are now leaving the United States and fleeing Austin, changing countries because of student loans. Millions of America owe a collective $1.3 trillion in student loan debt, and roughly a quarter of them are behind in their payments, 25%. As they struggle to stay afloat, pay their bills, and to buy food, some have even sought refuge abroad where it's possible to escape student loan collectors, but only for those who plan never to return to the United States. Unbelievable. Wow. Some more subprime borrowers are falling behind on their auto loans. Rising delinquencies come as a warning sign that many loans may end up in default down the road, says John McCravey and Alice of the Bank. What may be the most troubling, however, is that the default rate is already climbing. It's up to 12.3% in January. That's the highest rate since 2010. 12.3% of the cars on the road are in default as far as their payments, Austin. That's nuts.
That's huge.
What's your next story?
That's really huge, actually. And that, one thing I would say about that, and that's what we've talked about before, is, you know, do your best to try and stay out of debt. If you're buying a vehicle, make sure you're buying something that you can reasonably afford. Even if the situation arises where your income decreases or it's limited, you still have the ability to pay that vehicle off, and try to pay that vehicle off as quickly as possible. a lot of guys, you know, once they buy another vehicle, then they want to buy another vehicle, then they buy something else, and they buy this. And a lot of people get trapped into that, and it's not the best financial decision to make, but do the best you can to knock down your vehicles and at least get positive equity in the vehicle. That's one of the biggest things that Dad's taught me before. You know, if you're not able to pay your vehicle off fast, at least get positive equity in it. So in the event that something does happen and you do have to walk away from it or you do have to sell it, you have enough money to where, hey, you know, I got $5,000, I got $10,000 in equity. I'm not upside down, because what I see happen so much now is with these like 72 and 84 month, and I think they got like an 88 month loan now, the payments are so small, even with these high cost cars, you know, $30,000, $40,000 cars, with these payments that are so small, that after the first year or so, even if they have something that's, you know, a pretty good resale value, they don't have any equity in it. I mean, in a $40,000 car with no money down, if you do like one of those 82-month loans, your payment's like $400, $450 a month off the top of my head. You know, so after a year, you've put down like $5,000 on your car after a year. Well, I mean, that barely covers the taxes and the dealer costs and the fees from buying it initially. So if you buy something new, guys, make sure you get a good deal on it. Go check other dealerships. Never trust one dealership, ever, ever. Always get multiple bids from multiple different dealerships if you're looking at vehicles, and try to get them to bid off of each other, get them down lower and lower. Dealerships, they have a very high margin on a lot of vehicles. You'd be surprised. And I've done this numerous times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And who taught you how to do all that, Austin?
You did. That would be Dad.
and here's what you do too. When you get the price from the dealership, you want the out the door price. You want all their hidden fees, everything. You want the tax tag, title, dealer fees, everything. So if it's going to be $12,000 for the new car, or $10,000 to $15,000 for the new car, or $20,000 for the new car, you want to know exactly what the out the door price is, and that's what you compare with every other dealership. Because I've had this happen to me many years ago. I get the price for the car. They get the best price. I go to do the deal. I end up finding out there was a $1,500 or $800 dealer fee that they didn't tell me about. So don't allow yourself to fall into that pit. Also, remember when Barry Sorto, when he was basically, you know, first put in office, he decided he wanted to kind of resurrect the automobile industry in the United States, and he has Cash for Clunkers program. And what was interesting about this is when he did all of this, you know, everybody was thinking, wow, what a great deal. You're getting $2,000-$3,000 off on a new General Motors product. Well, here's the thing about all of this. It wasn't just General Motors. It was like across the board with all these different cars. It should have been American-made cars only to do that, number one, since it was being subsidized by the government. And number two was this. It had very little to do with the automobile industry and everything to do with getting the clunkers off the road that could not be tracked. When you have the GPS available in your car and you have navigation in your car, all those cars can be tracked. When you have OnStar in your car, they can be tracked. And when they can be tracked, they can be turned off. The satellite can actually push a relay button, and the car will actually come to a halt. I've got a friend of mine who's a car dealer over in Plant City, and a couple of months ago, he had somebody come down and bring a brand new Escalade down, and he had a clear title on it, and he traded the Escalade in on a Corvette and drove the car back to New Jersey. Well, come to find out, the title was a copy. It was a bogus title. He had already issued a full lien on the car. They tried to get the clear title on the Escalade. It was like $85,000 owed on it. He used that to get a new Corvette free and clear. And they told him, and he laughed at him. He goes, "Yeah, good luck getting us back from New Jersey." And they said to him, "Look, we don't need to get back from New Jersey. We're fixing to stop it on the interstate. We're fixing to call OnStar. It's been stolen, and it's going to roll over to the side of the road. It won't run, and then we're going to send a tow truck to come pick it up, or you can take it to the local Chevy dealer. You choose what you want." And he took it to the local Chevy center, and he dropped it there rather than getting stuck on the interstate. That's why we have the Clash for Clunkers, because you used to buy a decent car for your kids for $800, $1,000. I know, Austin, your first car I bought you was a 1988 Crown Vic. Great car. Paid $800 for it. Great car. But those cars don't exist anymore because they've all been clunkered. They've all been crushed. So they're not around anymore. And so that's one of the main reasons they did that, because they wanted to have everybody getting tracked in their cars, and they wanted to get off, you know, and they basically would use that as a ruse. But I think that was the primary reason. That may have had some input on the automobile industry because it did push up some prices on stock. But the reality is this. Think about what they did. They took all of the old good cars back off the road. So now when you try to buy your kid a car, you got to spend $4,000 or $5,000 to get a decent car now. It wasn't like that before. It was $800, $1,000 bucks, get a car that would run really well. What do you think about that, Oz?
Yeah, you're completely accurate. We've discussed that numerous times. We even talked about it when they did the cast for Bunkers originally, mm-hmm. because you're absolutely right. I think they gave like up to $4,000 or $5,000 is what it was on trade in on any vehicle. So if you came in there with a car that was worth $1,000, but it ran decent, you got $5,000 for it on trade in on top of, you know, rebates and other stuff with a new vehicle. So that's, in my opinion, that's exactly why they did it. Because like you said, they wanted to get all these old school vehicles off. They wanted to get everything with navigation, OnStar tracking. Even if they can't get the OnStar on it, they can't shut the vehicle off, they still want to enable it with the GPS tracking. Because as we've heard of numerous times, they're really trying to push this mile taxation thing. They want to tax you on how many miles you drive every year. Mm-hmm. And see, there's no possible way you could ever implement that on an old school vehicle. Shoot, a lot of those old cars, you could just like unplug a switch behind the dash and it would turn the odometer off. It wouldn't even roll anymore. That's why they went with all the digital odometers and stuff now, because those are so easy to tamper with. The new ones, they're so digital, you can't even do anything without all the lights flipping off on the dash. You can't even put, you know, a tuner on them or anything, or do anything to the exhaust. Everything lights up on them. And that was the overall goal, in my opinion. I think you're correct about that.
I'm going to read a couple of real quick news stories because we're running out of time. New York board votes to allow illegals to teach and obtain professional licenses. This is because the illegals have come in now into the country, and they don't have people to speak their languages. This is from the migrants who are coming in from the Middle East, from Africa, also from South America and Central America. They don't have enough people speaking Spanish or the migrants' languages. So now New York has voted to allow illegals to teach and obtain professional licenses without being citizens of the United States. I mean, I figured it would have to go to this because there's no choice, because you can't talk to the kids unless you do all of that. Chris Christie delivers a major blow to party elites by basically endorsing Trump. This is Bloomberg. The United Republican Establishment Front against Donald Trump started to crumble in a potentially profound way on Friday when New Jersey Governor Chris Christie backed Trump. Then Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, one of the primary conservatives in the entire Senate, endorses Trump. It's time to make America great again. Senator Jeff Sessions of Republican Alabama endorsed Donald Trump at a campaign rally in Huntsville Sunday night. Sessions promised a gang of eight type of immigration reform bill who would not be passed in the Donald Trump presidency. Sessions says Trump is not perfect, but nobody is, and endorse the candidate. This movement, he doesn't take money from political groups and lobbyists. He's committed to leading the country in an effective way. You know, nobody's perfect. We can't have everything, can we, Mr. Trump? But I can tell you one thing. I think it's time, in my opinion, in my best judgment, at this time in America's history, we need to make America great again, Sessions said. This was a huge, huge blowback to the GOP Republican. Another bombshell. Roger Stone reveals the establishment is going to be using Mitt Romney as Plan B if Rubio fails. And oh, by the way, some of the National Enquirer magazines and these tabloids now, Austin, are listing him as being bubble boy down in Miami. He was actually with a homosexual outside of a restroom in Miami when he was younger, which was a known homosexual area by the bathroom. And the guy ended up being the big porn maker for gay porn stuff out there in Miami, you know, years later. I mean, this guy is just not who you think he is at all. So what's your next story, buddy?
That's interesting. Yeah, Rubio's definitely not going to be my first prime candidate, but I find that very interesting that they're talking about putting Mitt Romney in, because that would be a giant bombshell for all the individuals, especially that voted for him and that were hardcore Romney fans back in 2012 and 2000. Well, I think it was 2012 was the main when he ran. So yeah, that would really throw a wrench into it. I don't know if it'd be enough to completely knock Trump out of, you know, standing, but man, that would definitely throw a wrench in it. I mean, that's interesting.
Well, again, because he's Mormon, it's going to come back to haunt him pretty hard. That was the biggest problem he had last time with conservative voters.
Yeah,
I love you guys. I appreciate you listening today. Healthmasters.com. Thank you for supporting us. Remember, the sale's good until midnight today. Doug, D-O-U-G-5. I appreciate you guys. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Austin, go ahead and close.
Thank you, guys. You have a wonderful night. And, if you need anything, give us a call or go on our website and email us. You have a blessed night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.